They love Star Wars. They love comic books. But they really love football. It's Nick and Cecil. Here's former Bronco Nick Ferguson and DenverFan.com's Cecil Lennie.
Oh, we got to talk to our guy, Nate Jackson. DenverFan.com. You hear him right here on The Fan. Brought to you by the Dadvocates. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
What's up, guys? How are you guys doing on this Friday night?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad that when I say, what's going on, buddy, you don't say, they're putting you into carbon freeze. But we're Star Wars nerds here. We like to have a good time, but we also have some heady conversations and some heavy conversations as well. When we talked to Greg Camarillo earlier this week about his tweets and, just kind of mental health of players when your playing days are done. Your latest at DenverFan.com. Could we have helped Vincent Jackson? Let's get into that and just why it's so important that, we all have this conversation.
Yeah, well, it's becoming sort of common. Every once in a while we have a tragedy like this where we lose one of our former heroes, former peers, a former player just kind of comes up in the news when he dies. And then it's something we talk about for a couple of days. It trends on Twitter and then just goes away. And I think it's important for us to ask the questions when a guy dies young like that, if we could have helped it. And so everybody knows that football players, athletes struggle with life after football. It's difficult for a lot of guys. We kind of get that. But there are some guys who hey, he just gets it. He's going to be fine. And Vincent Jackson was one of those guys. He was like the model of life after football, 38 years old, was a business owner, active in the veterans community, honorary sheriff. He had a wife and a young daughter, and he just died alone in a hotel room. And he was in that hotel for a month, And so we don't know the full, basically, the results of the autopsy have not been released yet, so we don't really know why he died and how he died. But his wife, or someone in his family cited alcoholism, chronic alcoholism, and some people suspect CTE, so they're donating his brain. So they're going to figure it out. But for a guy like that to be alone for a month in a hotel room before he died, how do we prevent that from happening? And I guess the point of the piece was that, for football players, you succeed on the field because you say no to pain. You deny your pain. I don't feel anything. I'm fine. That's how you master the pain, you master the game. But the real world isn't like that. And so these guys go into the real world with this mentality around mental illness, around brain trauma, around addiction, and they don't tell anybody that they're hurting. And I guess the question I'm raising is, how do we normalize treating the brain, mental illness, addiction, like a muscle that you got to rehab, attack coldly, and go after until you're 100% and get back on the field? We need to let these guys know that it's okay to look at their brains in that same way and approach this stuff with an open mind and end the stigma around it.
Now, Nate, you said something that's very interesting, because both you and I have been in a lot of locker rooms. And when you can look around the locker room, you can identify the guy, okay, he's going to be okay because he's doing the right thing. The other guy I worry about because, one, he is not understanding that he does not have the same paycheck as a guy that he's hanging around with. So for one, he's setting himself up for failure financially. And even though, once again, you and I have been in the same locker room, if you identify guys like that, and when you have, what are some of the things that you've said to them?
Well, never said anything to anybody at the time. I mean, you're all just on your own ride. You're trying to survive it. So it's hard to psychoanalyze a buddy and get in his, in his mind and talk about his finances and stuff like that. But I would say that, honestly, the money doesn't even have that big a it matters when you're done playing, but for reasons with mental illness and addiction and things like that, Vincent Jackson had all the money in the world. I don't think money was a problem for him, In some ways, it allowed you to disappear because you have money to disappear, and no one can find you. You have plenty of money to sit in a hotel room for as long as you want, with as much of whatever you want around you as you want. And a lot of guys do that. They disappear with their money, and that money is a crutch for them, so they don't have to come out and get a job. You know, I'm coming out into the world because I don't have money to just sit on like that. You know, and I don't know how you feel, Nick, but I think it's good to go back out and try to make a living. And so really it's about your state of mind, your mental health. And I think that's what we got to encourage, a way to improve that in guys who lead the sport.
Having a great conversation with Nate Jackson, DenverFan.com. You hear him right here on the Fan as well. I remember when Kenny McKinley of the Denver Broncos took his own life, and at 23 years old. And, you know, people say at the time it's when you're injured and you're away from the facility and you're not around, you know, your football family. Nate, do you feel the NFL is doing better with, you know, identifying these sorts of things? Because I think the IR rules were different back then a little bit in Kenny's instance, where, you know, you couldn't really go to the facility if you were, you know, injured or on injured reserve. Correct me if I'm wrong there. But do you think the league is doing enough in terms of, you know, understanding that if a guy's banged up and he can't be around his players, or, you know, can't be, quote unquote, as much of a part of a team as he wants to be, are they approaching things the right way from a league standpoint? We know player safety, you know, no live tackling drills, all those sorts of things. They've made those changes. But are they trying to maybe get ahead of this and identify these problems earlier league-wide?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've added some kind of, like, you know, mental health and wellness kind of focused doctors at the league office who's trying to assess the more holistic, total, you know, total body, total mind approach to trying to treat these guys. I know they talked about, you know, CBD and cannabis. They've eased up on that. They're trying to get a hold of some of the medications they're taking. I don't think they're, you know, they're cracking down on the dispensal of the opioids, which can get crazy, you know, and it's a team to team thing. Some training staffs are kind of stingy with the opioids, you know. They don't want their guys to be stuck on them, but some dispense them like Pez, you know, and you can get as many as you want. But on top of that, they circulate through the locker room too, because you always have guys in the locker room who have those connections on the outside. You always have doctors on the outside who are happy to write a prescription for 500 pills to an NFL football player, you know, because they're cool now. Right. So you always get people who want to facilitate any desire you have, however bad for you it is, however, you know, dark it is. And I think the NFL knows this. The problem, like I was talking about before, is that it's pride. Guys don't really talk when they're hurting, man. And it's like, so you can have the programs in place. You can have the thing set up. You can have people on site who are ready to talk. But if these guys don't want to do it, they're going to do what they're going to do. Football players are super stubborn and strong-willed, and no weakness is allowed in football. In the locker room, there is no weakness. And so those moments of fear and doubt you have as a human being, you don't really express those in that environment. It's really difficult to do that. And so it's a really tricky situation for the NFL to try to tease that out of them, to get them to get in touch with that side and be open about it. But killers on the other side, when they go out onto that field, you kind of turn off some of your emotion to be able to do that job. And so it's hard to flick it back and forth.
Well, here's what I'm going to inject into this conversation, because I can only lean on, you know, my experience dealing with certain situations like this. In my time with the 49ers, I was a coach, but I still engaged with the players to figure out, okay, well, what do you want to do after football? And we used to call it Ferg Fridays, where I would always come out with some kind of topic to kind of tap into the guy's idea of preparing for life after football, to get them to think about that. Because I went through that transition. And only in football that the transition is deemed to be that of a terrible transition. It doesn't have to be if you do a couple of things. One, you have to start preparing before, you know, your time is over, right? You have to start looking at what things that you might be interested in and then go in that direction. Also, when you're in the locker room environment and you identify a guy who you figure as though he may be a guy that may have trouble, you go to that player and you start telling him, look, man, you can't live the life of these other guys. I knew personally I couldn't live the life financially of John Lynch and Chad Bailey. Our paychecks were a little different. So when you notice guys like that, you know, we have to go and stay in contact with those guys, because we know as players which one of those guys are kind of subjective to going through situations like this. And I used to have conversations with Rod Smith all the time. And Rod would always say, well, he would point out a guy. based on how he's carrying himself. So when we see that, we have to continue to stay connected to those guys. And Nate, we've lost a lot of guys. Vincent Jackson is just the latest of the guys. And this is why I've taken it upon myself, and I encourage every guy that I've come across, call your teammates that you haven't spoken to in years, because after we stop playing, we disperse and we do all these things. But if we call them and we check on them, we can kind of keep some of this down ourselves. We don't need the league to police this and do it for us. We just have to reach out to our guys ourselves.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. And I need to do it more. I'm sure everybody needs to do it more. It's like you get caught in your own life and your own thing, and it's hard to reach back out. It's like when you go into a football team, you go in and you're on this team. You get signed and you're part of this group of dudes who's all on the same mission, same path. But when you leave by yourself. You leave all by yourself with holding your bag, and it's got your stuff in it, and it's a garbage bag. You walk out, and that's it. So you leave into the world alone, and you feel like you just drifted away from your guys, you know? And you're right. You gotta stay in touch. And the world needs more coaches like you, you know, who kind of gets guys thinking about that. Like, I never had any coaches who talked about that in the NFL. Not one. You know, Rod was a guy who did, who prepared all of us for it. You know, he had money meetings for the rookies, and he taught us how to manage money. He's like, if you buy a $50,000 car, guys, it's not just you signing your name on the dotted line. It's this. And he pulled out $50,000 and dropped it on the table. They were like, oh, okay, cool. Let me get some of that. And I had just bought my brand new $50,000 Denali like the week before. I was on the practice squad. It was the stupidest thing ever. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so stupid. But I'm still driving that car, by the way, to this day.
That was like a great investment, Nate. Looking back on it, it's a great investment now.
Yeah. Really good. I am smart with my money. What can I say?
Well, there we have him. Nate Jackson, brought to you by the Dadvocates. Nate, we appreciate your candor, appreciate your time, brother, and thank you very much for having this important and heavy conversation with us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having it as well, man. It takes all of us having it to make a difference, so I appreciate you guys having me on.
To that, I would say double true. There's Nate Jackson, ladies and gentlemen, DenverFan.com. You hear him right here on The Fan as well. It is Nick and Cecil on a big, fun Friday. And what the hell Nuggets lowlights did you send me, Nick? We're going to talk about that next.